Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To my champions, to my sisterhood of the traveling pantsuits.
No more hangers!
Well, East Coast girls are hip, I really dig those styles they wear.
Bad theater is bad theater. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know, after hearing Hillary, I'm almost glad Obama's running. Play it. Just play it. Again, I got to play it. No one's listening anyway. They're all on vacation. I'm talking to myself here. 50% of the audience is away, so what are you going to do? It's like a dead week. I mean, where is everybody? How can everybody be away? Doesn't anyone work? Love this song. Do you love this song? I'm having coffee here. Teddy's on the couch. Couch. God, when this song came out, did I ever want to move to the West Coast? Little did I know. I mean, you know, this song came out before there was even such a thing as STDs. I mean, no one knew about them. We called it something else in those days. Everyone clap hands now.
Yeah, but I couldn't wait to get back in the States.
What's the favorite group of George Bush? Very, very George Bush. All right, come on, wake up out there, for God's sakes. 960 babies in TB scare at Kaiser Hospital in San Francisco. You hear this? Kaiser Permanente is contracting. They certainly did contract the mothers. Kaiser Permanente is contacting 960 mothers whose babies may have been exposed to a healthcare worker in San Francisco who had an active case of TB. You hear? Now, of course, the immigration status of the healthcare worker, has not been exposed. But the children were exposed to TB, that we know. Bush's faith-based initiative gave Obama's church $1.5 million. You hear this? That's Reverend Wright. Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago has received more than $1.5 million in federal tax money since 2003. You hear how it all works? There's no difference between the parties here. At the end of the day, it's a sham. It's two-card Monty here. Are you kidding me? Whoever wins, the other side gets smeared off anyway at the end of the day. The genius is that the founding fathers were such geniuses that we even survive with some freedom at all in 2008. Is, believe me, not a product of the two parties. It's a product of the geniuses of the Constitution who created it. Obama's speech stage resembles ancient Greek temple. He should come out in a toga. That would be great. Imagine if he came out in a toga. Fear grips illegal aliens after Mississippi plant raid. Now, that's interesting. Nearly 600 illegal immigrants suspected of illegal they were seized in Mississippi, but apparently the other workers on the line, the legal Americans, cheered. You didn't hear that part of the story. They actually broke out in applause in the factory as they took the illegals off the floor. I don't know what that's about. In other words, the cheering workers were glad the illegals went home because what's going to happen is the factories are going to have to look for local American workers and actually pay them more. That's all. So the cost of goods will go up. Big deal. That's all that's going to happen. They'll find white people and black people who want jobs. Let's see what else I have for you on the Savage website, michaelsavage.com. European deaths will outnumber births from 2015. You hear this? The forecasts show Europe aging rapidly, with fuel workers paying the pension and health care costs of more and more elderly people. And next to it, we have a little picture. Islam will dominate the world. Isn't that wonderful? Palestinian father kept children naked in a stable for 20 years. Ibrahim Kandil Masalama is also accused of beating his children and feeding them with slops. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? And the liberals say that we have the worst country in the world. Little do they know. Let's see. Dramatic moment. Teen suicide bomber gave herself up. I don't even care anymore. Anyway, this is all on michaelsavage.com. Three decapitated bodies found near Tijuana in mostly drug-related violence that is sweeping Mexico. Three decapitated bodies found near Tijuana. Tijuana. I want to be politically correct, so I'm pronouncing it correctly. You guys say Tijuana. I want to ask you something. On my website, michaelsavage.com, I don't understand this. There's a Savage web poll that's up for a year and a half where I ask, should I leave radio and vote, run for the presidency? And I, of course, I didn't do that because, A, I couldn't collect $50 million a month. That's number one. B, I am too honest. C, I have no desire to eat rubber chicken dinners and kiss babies, as well as kiss other things in order to get ahead. But it's 75 million people have gone onto my website. Wait a minute. Web poll, click to vote for Savage. You click on that. Listen to this. It says 75 million people have done this already. How is this possible? Do you think somebody hacked my website? Do you actually believe a third of the American people have gone on my website and voted? I don't believe it. Wait, it says, should Michael Savage run for the presidency? Yes, no. Post. Okay, I'll say yes. Post. Okay, now it says, see the answers. It's very slow because many of you are buying psychological news. I don't believe this. Wait a minute. Hold on. 71 million people said I should run for the presidency. 531,000 of you said, no, I shouldn't. No, 5 million said I shouldn't. And 71 million said I should. Maybe it's an accurate poll. That's shocking. Now, if 75 million people took the time over a year and a half to go onto michaelsavage.com and they said one thing or the other, most of you, 90% said I should run, that's amazing. How come I'm not known by anybody outside of my own audience? How come I'm not one of the scungilis out there in Denver sitting there? How come not one of the scungili walking around in Denver being interviewed by anybody? Answer, that's why you voted for me, because I'm an independent. See, here's how you could tell a guy is not an independent. When he declares he's at the convention as an independent, you know he's not an independent. When he's not invited to the convention by anybody, you know he's a true independent. So anybody who's there is not an independent. I am the true independent. I created the niche for you, as I represent you. Now, there's another soundbite I'm getting ready to run. I don't have the guts for it. I'm actually running out of guts. This is Jimmy Carter calls Obama a certain name in clip 4. Listen carefully.
I think it already has sent a wave of approbation and admiration in many countries around the world, just knowing that this black boy who grew up with just a loving mother and grandparents, and that was about all he had to start with, has now had a chance.
I want you to rewind this. Did I actually hear him say this black boy? I do not believe Carter. I can't imagine if he was introducing a Jewish person what he would say. But, I mean, the real Jimmy Carter, I've warned you, is a racist pig. I've told you that. I've warned you that. I told you he hates Jews. I told you he hates blacks. I told you he's a southern white cracker through and through. And not every southern white is a cracker. I don't even know what a cracker is, but I know he's one. Any guy who's had relatives who had shook snakes and drank arsenic in order to meet the Lord, I know is really crazy. Play clip 4 again.
I think it already has sent a wave of approbation and admiration in many countries around the world, just knowing that this black boy who
grew
up
with... Oh, did he say just knowing? Just knowing that this black... Doesn't anyone get it? Haven't you people figured out what's going on out there with the white liberal at their plantation masters? Just using people of color to advance their own power trip. Forget Marxism and forget all that for a minute. Just think power trip. You know, I'm in such a good mood. I'm frightened. I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel good. Something is wrong. I normally don't feel well. There's always something bothering me, something wrong. No, don't get me wrong. I can't see out of my right eye, and I injured my back the other. See, this is the problem. When you injure something in your body, at a certain point, you want to prove that you're still healthy. So I did something I shouldn't do, which was drag a carpet up from the basement to the house. I said, who cares? I'm still strong. I grabbed a carpet that I knew I shouldn't have grabbed. I doubled it over. It was something for two men. And I pulled it up the steps. Nothing wrong. That night, I felt as though someone hit me in the lower back with a baseball bat. Now it's the eye in the back now. Now, why am I telling you this? Because it's a slow day. I don't want to talk about my book, Psychological Nudity. It's doing fine. I would appreciate if you're going to order it, you order it like by Tuesday, because I'm putting in my print order on Tuesday. That's all. I need to know what the run should be. It's doing fine. You know, I hope you get a copy. If I don't print enough, you won't. If I print enough, you will. I love the book. I'm happy that it's out. And I'm going to play a little of the radio stories today. Life is good. People are wonderful. You remember that bumper sticker in the 70s? Life is good. People are wonderful. Wait, no. Life is good. People are wonderful and business is great. I was so mad when I saw people going by with that bumper sticker. I wanted to kill them. Things were terrible for me. Life was bad. People were horrible and business was bad. At that time in my life, horrible. I had a broken old Volvo that couldn't get out of its own way. It spewed diesel fumes. It had bald tires. It was like 12 years old. I think I was a graduate student at that time. I was. I'll never forget I was at a traffic light coming home from Berkeley. It was so hard for me. Two young kids, affirmative action. Everything was working against me. No matter what I did, I had 15 books published at the time. And still in all, I couldn't get a job in the teaching professions because I was the wrong color and the wrong gender. That is, I had a gender. I wasn't transgendered. So consequently, in the Bay Area, they were not hiring. It was only transgendered need applied. I was coming home. It was just a bad day at graduate school. And a guy pulled up next to me in a newer car. And I didn't like his face. He didn't like mine. And we drag raced and I lost. How could you win in a Volvo diesel? But to show you how angry I was, I tried anyway. So at the next traffic light, I catch up to him. He rolls his window down just before the light turns red, green again. And he says to me, look, if you want a drag race, get a faster car. And he sped away. I got so mad at him. But you know what? It worked on me, and it worked on me, and it worked on me. And eventually I bought a new Cadillac. At the end of the year, I bought a fast new four-door brown Cadillac. I remember to this day in 1978. I don't know how. I saved every dime, and I wanted a new car because I graduated from graduate school. I was older. I'd gone back to school late in life. I had jobs. Anyway, I worked nights, days, mornings, evenings. It's the American way. You want a faster car? You're angry at the guy next to you? Then work. Take another job and buy a faster car. I didn't ask the government to give it to me. I didn't send a letter to my congressman and say, dear congresswoman, can you please send me a new Cadillac? Could you play East Coast Girls, take a break, look at Psychological Nudity, take a look at the stories I have on michaelsavage.com. Call me at 1-800-449-8255 on any of the topics that you see on the website, you heard me talk about, whatever. All right? Have a nice day. I'm enjoying myself. The audience is not here. I know that. 50% of them are somewhere else. Where are they? In a bungalow? They're in a bungalow colony somewhere. They don't even exist anymore. I live in the past in some way. I admit it. I'm proud of it. I live in 1776. Take a break. Make some money. August 27th, 2008, the Savage Nation. Did you ever think you'd live this long and get here? Stupid question. You don't ask an audience that. They get scared when you bring up mortality. It's supposed to be entertainment radio. You know, basically, AM radio is an entertainment medium. How talk radio ever got started, I'll never understand. How do we inject reality into entertainment? I mean, with all the fools out there who all they care about is hat on backwards, A and B, C versus D. How could you have so many idiots who cheer for sports while the world is burning around them? How? That's how the illegals invaded America, because the schmucks have their hats on backwards, paying attention to the A's, the B's, the C's, and the D's. That's all. This letter just came to my attorney. I cannot believe it. It was just forwarded to me. I swear to you, I'm going to read it live. It's to Michael Savage, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco, California, 94111. And it's from the City Arts and Lectures, Inc., live on public radio. I'm going to read you the letter. Board of directors include a dead person, a dead leftist who hated white people named Susan Sontag, to give you some idea who's inviting me. She's inviting me from the grave to join her. Some character I never heard of named William Koblenz is on the board of directors, whatever he is. Peggy Garlinghouse, blah, blah. Dear Michael Savage, City Arts and Lectures would like to invite you to come to the Herbst Theater in San Francisco for an evening in which you would be interviewed on stage during our annual On Art and Politics series. We are presently scheduling our Winter-Spring 09 series and would be delighted to send you more detailed info, as well as if 90 minutes at the Herbst with one of our skilled and congenial interviewers might be possible. In addition to our theater audience, we have a fairly large radio listenership, over more than 160 public radio stations, including our own KQED-FM. It would be a pleasure to bring you to the Herbst and to our San Francisco and national audience. You probably know that there is some overlap in our audiences. I can promise an interesting evening. I wonder, does it come with a barrel of hot oil, or what does it come with? I'd be pleased to provide additional information to you with the slightest encouragement, sincerely, and so forth. I won't read the lady's name. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, you know I'm not going to say yes. I do not specialize in being skewered for the entertainment of psycho-liberal America haters. But what questions do you think that their congenial interviewer would try to embarrass me with? If 90 minutes on stage with one of our skilled and congenial interviewers might be possible, blah, blah, blah. So what do you think when they get me up there, assuming I would go, which I'm not going to do, and I'm live on 160 public radio stations, and it's an audience full of pot-smoking liberal psychos in San Francisco who've come just to see me, let's say, crucified. Tell me what you think they would ask Michael J.C. Savage on that stage. I'm serious. This is a great show topic. New York, do quickly. What does cracker mean?
Cracker, it's a term that refers to slave owners who crack the whip. That's where it's
Oh, my from. God. And I thought it was a saltine.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. No one called on that show topic. John Gotti's mother dies at 96. God bless her soul for giving birth to New York City HIV rate 3 times nation, that of the nation. That's really an achievement for New York. They should give them a gold medal in HIV. New York City HIV rate 3 times the nation? Gee, I wonder why. You think it's certainly not in the water or the air. It must be behavioral. Do they connect it to behavioral relationships of any? New York City data. Residents are contracting the virus that causes AIDS at 3 times the national rate. What do you mean contracting? The figures are the first to pinpoint when people became infected. City officials attribute the city's relatively high rate of new infections to its large populations of gay men, blacks, and other groups on whom HIV has traditionally taken a heavy toll. Now, do you understand the news speak here? What do you mean taking a heavy toll? Gay men and other groups on whom HIV has traditionally taken a heavy toll. That is grammatically incorrect. That is scientifically incorrect. It's all wrong. And the reason I'm angry is that if you want to reduce the incidence of a disease, what you do is you caution people about the relationships between contracting the disease and certain behaviors. They could have said, why these groups have traditionally had high rates of HIV, instead of just saying that they contract it at a higher toll as though it's some mysterious reasons. You get it? In New York City, new HIV infections 3 times national rate. I'm sorry to hear it, but why don't you caution people as to why it's happening, since you do so with smoking? Every day we hear about smoking causes lung cancer, which it does, and this causes global warming, which it doesn't. But when it comes to certain diseases, they have nothing to offer. Nothing. Ooh. Sad. Disease is terrible. Whoever gets it for whatever reason, all disease is terrible. I'm not sitting here celebrating a disease. Don't get me wrong. Lotto winner gives a church $3 million. I guarantee it wasn't an atheist in a foxhole. That I can guarantee you. Now we turn to something pleasant. We're going to go through the autobiography, and I'm going to talk about a story in Michael Savage, Psychological Nudity. And by the way, thank you very much. The orders are coming in nicely. It's not going to be, you know, the number one bestseller, nor am I aiming for that. This is an unedited book in the sense that it did not go through a New York publisher. No vetting. So it has stories in it that I think are wonderful that they may have taken out. Like, for example, the Nympho story, the Nympho in Alley Pond Park. I think that's a touching story. There's no salaciousness to it. It's actually quite touching. First autopsy, love by the sewer plant, and 75 other stories. But I want to play for you now and show you what kind of guy I really am, because it's an easy story. Clip 3, the Nympho in Alley Pond Park. Go ahead, please. So you see, I was about 16 years old, Queens, New York, and one of the girls in the crowd was, well, she was that way. She was a nymphomaniac. It was a cold winter's evening. A group of 5 or 6 guys took her in a car to Alley Pond Park, and they had their way with her. I was one of the guys in the car, and I did not want my way with her. In fact, I felt bad for her. I didn't know what to do. I was the idiot, sensitive kid in the back who was laughed at. Like, hey, it's your turn. I said, no, I just don't want to do this. Something's wrong here. So after the guys, these pigs, these animals, most of whom wound up working in the garment center, selling clothing. Some, I think, went into the television business. One went into the record business. Got through with her. The car went back to her house. And here's the whole crux of the story. It's not like laughing about the nymphomaniac in the car. Here's the crux of the story. Car pulls up back in front of her house. And she lived in a nice house. And her father's waiting for her on the lawn of the house with an overcoat. The guys basically throw her out of the car, disheveled and like half naked, laughing, and speed away. And I turn around and see the father walking up to her to cloak her and cover her nakedness with the overcoat. Now, there's so much in that story that needs to be discussed. I don't have the time for it. I have 1 minute and 15 seconds. What a father. What a great father he was. Now, you'd think a father would scream, you filthy slut, you, blah, 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 how dare you? Or he'd come at the car and hit the guys. He didn't do either, did he? He lived with what was. He knew who his daughter was and what her proclivities were. I don't know how she wound up. I mean, maybe she turns out. A lot of people go through these phases, and they, you know, in the woman's side, you know, can straighten out. I mean, I don't know what they become. Maybe a yoga instructor or something later on in life, or if they're a male and they suffer from satyriasis, they become a president, like Bill Clinton. You know, if they suffer the equivalent of nymphomania in male, it's satyriasis, and that can make you into a wonderful president in some cases. But in either case, that's the story of the nymphomaniac at Alley Pond Park. That goes with the song which we're going to play right now on the way out this hour, the Only Have Eyes For You song, Springland, New York. Oh, no, no, no. Wait a minute. Play the song. Play the song. But that goes with the girl next to the sewer plant.
I can't see anyone.
That's right. There was a runner-up in the Nympho story.
I love
it. I don't know what song goes with that.
All right, hold it. This is a good... The Nympho story is a touching story. And I, you know, a story like this has never been told till I told it on this show. And it's in Michael Savage's new Savage Radio Stories, Psychological Nudity book. It's a good story. There's beauty to it. Do you understand there's beauty in tragedy? And that's what it's all about. I mean, this is the kind of guy, I'm a natural storyteller because they're all true. Only I remember the important stories of my life. I got to tell you, you know, well, I don't know if it's too indulgent, but having written this book over the last year and having collected the stories and having put it together and having edited this, blah, 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 it's been very hard for me to look back on my life. You know, the Bible warns you, don't look back, you'll turn to a pillar of salt. They are so, that adage is so correct. In many ways, looking back is very, very wearing on a human psyche. And you start to think, is this my last book? You know, what if I wrote it intuitively because I'm going to drop dead or something? I mean, really, it's been freaking me out, to be frank with you. I don't know. But rushing it and this and that, And it's been hard. I mean, I want to go forward. I'm a guy who's always looking forward to something new in my life and creating something new. Like in 09, what do I want to do after the election? You know, I'm thinking about 09 already. The election's over. It's either Obama or McCain. That's all, one or the other. Either way, it's great for talk radio for obvious reasons. Because 50% of the country is going to be angry and ready to commit a revolution. So that's natural for talk radio. Then we're going to have Nancy Pelosi, Mussolini trying to pass a censorship bill, which cannot happen. The Supreme Court will bounce it. And I, through my legal fund, will probably sue anybody who tries to curtail freedom of speech, not only for myself, but anybody else in the media, liberal or conservative alike, because we cannot have a government telling us who can speak and who can't. 09 is going to be a phenomenal year. And and God forbid that our Islamo-fascist enemy has been not so much curtailed by the intelligence agencies as much as holding back themselves to make sure Obama doesn't win. You know, many people speculate the reason that we haven't had an attack is twofold. One, the security in America is excellent right now. But the B part of it worries me, which is that the enemy is actually waiting and ready. But they did not want to set off an event because it would absolutely usher McCain in. Period, end of story. You hear what I'm saying to you? I hope that that's really not a major, major issue. I pray it isn't. But in 09, I mean, it's made for talk radio, and I'm going to do the Michael Savage movie based on this book. Like the book, I'm going to do the documentary. That's all I know it's going to go out there. Will it be as big as when? I don't know. I don't care. Why must everything be a huge hit? Why must everything be reduced to how much money it made? Why? Where is it written that everything it's produced must be a huge hit? And if it isn't, it's no good. A certain amount, of course, is good success. Nobody wants a flop. But must it be a mega hit like an action movie? No. Must this book outsell everybody's book that ever was written in radio? No. I've had my big hits. This is a self-published book on my website. It's not even in the bookstore. So if it sells 25 to 50,000 copies, it'll be a huge monster victory for me. Did you hear what I said to you? I don't need 500,000 books to sell. If it does, fine. So it'll be something for a dog foundation, a dog something or other at the end. It'll go First Amendment defenses. People who need the help who are being hammered in the Marines will continue to support them. But I just want you to get it and enjoy it. That's all. So enough on that. Medford, Oregon. Johnny, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The best way to combat psychological nudity is with, I'm sorry, to combat political correctness is with psychological nudity. And congratulations on your new book.
Hey, that's nice. In other words, it's PC versus PN.
Yes, sir.
That's good. That could give rise to an entire new syllogism here.
I'm sorry?
Or, excuse me, an entirely new acronym.
Sure, absolutely.
PC versus PN. That's very good.
Political correctness versus psychological nudity.
Yeah, and psychological nudity versus PMS is not bad either.
Yes, sir. But what I believe, I'm a nationalist, and I believe in God. I believe in borders, language, and culture, and having the biggest, baddest military on the planet.
Thank you. So do I. And I'm going to live up to my word, Johnny. I made a commitment this year that if I should be healthy after the election, I'm going to try and take whatever I can to create the Nationalist Party in 09. And I'm going to live up to that word. Now, no one man cannot do that in, you know, overnight, but give me some time. I am going to try to raise money in 09. I'm going to try to create the Nationalist Party. Forget all this rubbish about all these people banging the drum. I'm an independent. It means nothing. What matters at the end of the day is mustering a large enough group of people to actually split the vote and create a power structure that doesn't exist to unify and coalesce the 20, 30 million independents in this country who are being forced to vote for one jerk or another, Johnny. And that's the Nationalist Party, borders, language, culture, and I will found it. With God's will, I'm telling you, with God's will and your listenership, everyone out there, I will found the Nationalist Party in 09. And maybe I'll tie the movie and the book to the formation of the Nationalist Party somehow. I'll have to think about it. I'll put together a team. I'll put together a cabinet, you know, and we'll do it. Now, I don't think it's going to have an effect in 4 years. Or that we could pull probably 10, 12, 15% of the vote in the next election. which will become a real important thing. But you see, here's the problem. We are not a parliamentary system. If we were, we'd have seats at the table. Right now, the two parties are a monopoly. Oh, Hillary's speaking again. All right, let's listen to the pantsuit woman.
Secretary, on behalf of the great state of New York, with appreciation for the spirit and dedication of all who are gathered here, with eyes firmly fixed on the future, in the spirit of unity, with the goal
please.
Of victory, with faith in our party and our country.
Turn it off. That's it. I don't want to hear any more hackneyed high school rubbish. These people remind me of the people I detested in high school, the GO people. I never liked people in the GO. The same people in politics. They're all, to be honest with you, they're beta brains. At top of the heap is a beta. If they were alphas, they would have gone into business, science, art, poetry, social work, anything but politics. And that's who's leading us. That's why we're in such trouble. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, think about it. The parliamentary system, for example, in England, has many splinter groups that have a seat at the table in their assembly. So you could have 1% of the vote and you have one seat out of 100. But at least you're heard. In this country, there's two parties. Everyone else can drop dead. So if you're a nationalist, you can go take you know what. This is what's wrong with our system. It needs to be revised. And I'm not suggesting we go to the parliamentary system, but something is wrong with a country that you have a choice between one monolith or another monolith. And neither party satisfies the majority of thinking people. And that's why I think the Nationalist Party's time has come. And I will try to do anything I can to make that happen. Okay, that's about it. I mean, that's a great idea. Norfolk, Virginia. Sharon, thank you for calling. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm a nationalistic psychological nudist.
Wow. A psychological nudist. I love that. Where do you meet?
Well, I meet listening to your radio show. That's about it. You know,
that's funny. Why don't all of us psychological nudists go to a beach in overcoats and just share our thoughts?
I'll have to use that when I'm art.
Yeah, that's what a psychological nudist would do, is simply open up their hearts and their minds.
Oh, well, you're fabulous. Keep on keeping on. I'll vote for it.
Thank you. You know, the next live event I do, I maybe just do a psychologically nude event, which means that we all show up and share our thoughts. That's funny. 1-800-449-8255. Chuck Schumer is on now. Oh, how exciting. Bigfoot, let's hear Bigfoot.
So proud, has been so proud to support our great leader, Hillary Clinton.
Let's stop for a minute. Can I ask you, why do they scream like they're on long distance? When I was a kid and they called, hi, is this long distance? Why do they talk in that voice when they have such good sound systems? Go ahead, go back to it.
That was launched in Springfield, Illinois, and continues here today, will culminate with millions.
Okay, I get it. They want to sound historic. They think they're Benjamin Franklin now at the Founders Convention. Chuck Schumer playing Ben Franklin. That's a laugh.
Leading the way in 2009, we'll take the next step on that path to reverse the disastrous course.
Oh, please, get him off. Disaster. Everything is a disaster. Every 4 years, the other party committed a disaster, and only we can straighten it out. 8 years, we had a disaster under Clinton, and then Bush came along. He was going to straighten out the disaster. Then we have 8 years of a disastrous Bush. Now they're going to come back and straighten out the disaster. It's always a disaster. Only the other party can save us. Come on, grow up. This sounds like a high school election, for God's sakes. No one believes a word anyone is saying. Nothing has come out of this. Look, I am a diehard nationalist, right-wing conservative, period. I don't mask anything. That's how I've been for 15 years. Borders, language, culture. Proud of it. But if one Democrat thus far had said one word that was inspirational, I would have said that was great. I haven't heard an inspirational paragraph, word, sentence, comma. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. I saw a show the other night. I do watch too much television, I will admit. Where a farmer got very angry in England. Somebody foreclosed his farm. He took a manure truck from his farm, some mechanized a truck that disperses manure across a field by spraying it. And he took it to the City of London, to the bank that foreclosed on him, and he sprayed the entire face of the building. It was amazing. I said, that's something that really war. I mean, that's sort of like Gandhi-like. That's like a nonviolent protest, doing a thing like that. This guy got really angry. He didn't shoot anyone like in America. He's not on Prozac. So he went to the bank and gave the fascia of the building a little surprise. Anyhow, here we are. 1-800-449. To go back to Bigfoot for a minute. Let me hear Bigfoot.
To allow President Obama's agenda to be blocked by the special interests and their allies in the Senate.
Ah, get off it. Special interests. You couldn't survive a minute without special interests. Come on. It's enough already. What malarkey. Get him off the stage. No, Obama stands for no special interests. You hear this? I don't understand who they're talking to. The brain dead. Now you understand why Pelosi et al. Want a ban on talk radio, because we basically stripped the mask off this rubbish. Don't you understand that they cannot tolerate people like me who are telling you the way it is, and you yourself know it, but no one else in the media says to you, you're right, your intuition is correct, they're all full of you-know-what, the farmer's machine. They're full of what's in the farmer's truck. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Kansas City, Burt, KCMO. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I have a proposed theory here that no matter who wins the election, we're going to face a big attack. And the only reason why I say that is because the first big attack that we really noticed was after Bill Clinton first got elected in 93, and that was the World Trade Center 1. When Bush
Bingo.
Was elected, they attacked us again. So my theory is that if Obama, or no matter what, they're going to bomb us again once we have a new president change to show us that no matter who we pick, we're
well,
still
going to well, why did they withhold from attacking now, this year?
Well, there's no, they attacked us with Bill Clinton, and after he didn't do anything, they had more isolated attacks with the coal and the other attacks that he didn't
That's
respond
right.
To.
93, the Marines got it in the barracks. The World Trade Center got it. That was right after Clinton. And, of course, just Bush
Savage.
Came in.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Supporters, to my champions, to my sisterhood of the traveling pantsuits.
Hello, lady from Pasadena. The little old lady from Pasadena.
It is the Savage Nation round two. Bung. You gotta love the Beach Boys, don't you? One-Eyed Jack here, Michael Savage, the One-Eyed Jack. When you hear this song, what do you think of, really? What part of Americana comes to your mind? Where were you in 62? You know what I'm saying? Oh, this is Jan and Dean. I'm so, what do I know? All the same to me, a giant blur. Reagan, hot dogs, Beach Boys, Blondes. I was sweating my butt off somewhere in the East Coast, working jobs, going to school, dreaming of California. Now I've been here so long, and what's here? Barbara Boxer. I thought I left her behind in Brooklyn. Here she is. Only worse, she's a senator. She's not running a brassiere store. Ha, How come everyone I thought I left behind in New York is a politician in San Francisco? Think about that. All the creeps that I ran away from are running California. How did that happen? Anywho, here we are. What a happy and sad cufflinks. I'm thinking, I don't want to talk about the book right now. It's so good that you'll talk about it later on when you get it. Internationally recognized for his wit and wisdom, Michael Savage has distilled his most poignant and meaningful life experiences into the select volume. Michael's lens will open your eyes to the beauty and sacrifice that has crafted and influenced life in this country. His saga is heartfelt and honest. Who wrote this? That's not bad. Michael's lens. Yeah, my one lens will open your eyes. Will open your eye. Savage is one of the finest storytellers of modern times. You know that that's true, but because I'm a conservative, they haven't discovered me on public television. You have to be a liberal to be a storyteller. Garrison Keillor, remember, he was a storyteller because every story ended with a liberal punchline. Every story ended with you had to have gay marriage and a global warming whatever. Here I am, the Mark Twain, actually. You know, I'm as close to Mark Twain as they get. Believe me, I'm not as good. Okay, I admit it. I'm not a megalomaniac. I may have a big ego, but who else can approach Mark Twain in our time? In other words, we all grew up on television, movies, whatever. So to think that you could be a Mark Twain is impossible when a man grew up without that media, right? But I, having a foot in the past and a foot in the present and a foot in the future, I'm as close to the Mark Twain of my time as anybody. I don't know who comes closer. If there is, God bless you. I don't know who it is. That's all. You know, I'm going to make another prediction. I'm looking at all these little stories in here. And again, I will say that some of these, if not many of them, will be used as the germ of an entire movie. You take any one of these stories, they could become an entire film if they're like fleshed out into an entire. Here, the electric blue saddle stitch pants. Great story. It could become a movie. Fat Al's Tuna. But anyway, it's not so much about the book. It's about the show, my time. I am happy. It has given me a new lease on life. It's like, as they say, a shot in the arm. You know, can I talk about how I'm feeling as a result? What it has done for me personally? Or would you rather hear Chuck Schumer? Who's speaking at the convention right now? Nobody. Richard Daley? The son? Let me hear the son of Richard Chicago. Daley.
I know something about Barack Obama.
Oh, I bet you do.
Barack Obama came to Chicago to help working families.
All right, let's stop. I heard it. Here's the part I don't understand. Why do they all yell like they're on long distance when they're at a convention? Don't they understand that the loudspeaker does that for them? Hello, are we on long distance? Can you hear me? Every time they go to a convention, they make it sound as though they're yelling because no one can hear them. It's not the 19th century, sir. We have electronic enhancement of the voice. It is called a loudspeaker system, and it actually enhances your voice so you don't have to yell as though you're at a convention. When Barack Obama came to Chicago, you think I speak with a rising inflection? I do, because that is how my ancestors spoke. With a rising inflection. And it sounds very ministerial when you speak with a rising inflection. Ladies and gentlemen. You just speak. It's a loudspeaker. Has anyone told him there's electronic enhancement? Now, here's a story I can't even read. I'm going to really get ill. It's on my website. I'm going to give you the headline and I'm going to stop. My headline says Bush outsourcing intelligence. The subtext of this phenomenally great article from the AP is this. Private contractors hold over 25% of U.S. intelligence jobs. I almost died when I read this. Today, more than a quarter of the U.S. intelligence agency's employees are outside contractors hired to fill in gaps in the military and civilian workforce, according to a survey of the 16 intelligence agencies. Now, I wonder, do you understand the magnitude of the story here? Listen to what I'm saying. It is no longer military, FBI, or intelligence agencies like the CIA doing the intelligence work 100%. 25% of the U.S. intelligence agency's employees are outside contractors. So here's the question. How many of these contractors are foreign-owned? Well, I don't know. How many of them are owned by Osama bin Laden front companies?
Well, I don't know. It's remember I predicted that if we didn't stop Bush, he would outsource the military. Remember I said that sarcastically a year ago? I said, if this man is not stopped in his mania to outsource, he'll outsource the military. Bingo. Bingo, he did it. While you slept, while you were concerned with internet pornography, while you were looking at sports with your hat on backwards, Bush was outsourcing the intelligence agencies. I don't know where this ends. And the bottom line of this story says Congress required the report because of concern that spy agencies might be relying too heavily on outside contractors to conduct sensitive intelligence work. I'd like to know who in Congress is the watchdog behind this, because I wouldn't care if he was the most psychotic liberal. I would kiss his hand. I don't care if it's a wacky liberal who figured this out. I'd kiss his ring. Did you hear what I just said to you? Do you understand what I said to you? 25% of all U.S. intelligence jobs are being conducted by outside contractors. How is this possible? How could Bush do this to this country? How is this possible that they can get away with this? And how many of these contractors are foreign owned? Moreover, how many of the contractors' intelligence agents are not American citizens? We don't know. All we know is the bottom line is good. The bottom line, the schmear job, the kickback, the rollback. Is it any wonder I'm trying to focus on stories? There is only so much any man can take. There's only so much a man can talk about. There is only so much that you can take. 960 babies in TB scare at a hospital in San Francisco. A healthcare worker. Of course, the immigration status of the healthcare worker is not discussed. Let's listen to clip five. Hello.
San Francisco Medical Center on Geary Boulevard in the city. Kaiser officials say they learned on August 18th that a maternity ward nurse tested positive for tuberculosis and may have been carrying the illness for as long as 5 months while working with hundreds of patients, staff members, and visitors.
How about the babies, little babies whose immune systems haven't been developed? Now, of course, in clip seven, they touch on it as far as they can on television. They're not allowed to say illegal immigrant, but they get as close as they dare, the poor guys in television in clip seven.
Officials would only say that the nurse was foreign-born, and it's not clear how she became infected with TB. Kaiser officials say
she's the victim. I'm sorry. I get it. She's foreign-born. They wouldn't say how she got infected from the illegal, from the baby. I get it. She's foreign-born. I track it down and give her the death penalty. That's it. I'd give her. I wouldn't give her any this is insanity. So she can infect babies, other hospital staff. But now we're supposed to say, oh, poor baby. We should give her treatment. The treatment she deserves is life in prison. That's the treatment. And the hospital administrator who hired her should be given life in prison without the possibility of parole. WTNT. I'm already out of energy. Now I'm getting worked up and angry. No good for me. Bad for my health. I got to be careful. That guy died swimming from Alcatraz to San Francisco, warming up for the triathlon. He was 63, dentist, in good shape. You can't blame it on laughing gas when he was a younger guy, you know. I mean, every dentist dabbles with laughing gas when he's young, right out of dental school. They try it. In the, you know, the dental chair and the laughing gas. They invite guests over. But okay, you wouldn't think it would take a toll like this many, many decades later that the poor guy's heart would blow out. So it makes you worry. Mark Twain said that he gets his exercise by walking to the funerals of his more athletic friends. That's hilarious. I do bicycle. But every time that I come back, and it's 105 degrees here in Northern California now in the sun. It's over 105. You could die. I hate it. When the pressure and the fog is kept off, I still mix up high pressure and low pressure. I'm not into meteorology. One of the pressure systems keeps the fog offshore. And you feel like you're in the Gobi Desert at this time. I despise it. I can't stand people. Ooh, I love the heat. They're living in San Francisco in August when it's supposed to be cold and foggy and balmy. You know, like Mark Twain said, the coldest winter he ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. That's the way it's supposed to be. When you get these freak days where the fog is kept offshore by the pressure system, you get these schmucks walking around in Bermuda shorts and saying, ooh, I love the heat. Then why don't you move back to Southern California if you love it so much? What are you doing here? You should be wearing an overcoat and a scarf like I do in August. I feel like saying in the elevator in my apartment building. What do you mean you love the heat? Go back to Phoenix where you came from. Love the heat? Love the heat. I hate the heat. I hate living behind air conditioning. I hate it. But look, it's an advantage over people who don't have air conditioning. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, the ancestors lived no air conditioning, no heat. The grandfather, where my, you know that my ancestors, did you know how poor they were? It's really amazing to me. I was shocked as a later adult to find out that my grandparents in the old country of Russia were so poor. They lived in a village where, of course, there was no heat, obviously. They had a clay oven in the center of this one-room house they lived in. And the grandparents in the old country slept atop the clay oven to keep warm in the winter. That's how cold it was in Russia in those days. And that's the kind of heating they had. I cannot believe this. And here I'm complaining it's too hot to have air conditioning. You hear this? We're all spoiled, myself included, by everything. Now I'm trying to pray over everything. Every time I say, thank God for this, thank God for that. Since the emergency room, it wakes you up. Because when you're in that gown and your pants are off, you know what I'm saying? When you're in that gown and your pants are off, there's nothing but you and whichever God comes through the curtain. I'll be right back. Savage. Five minutes after the hour, time is fleeing, fleeing, fleeing. So Hillary's up. Play No Wire Hangers to get me in the mood, please. Just No Wire Hangers. That's all I want to hear for a second.
No Wire Hangers!
Why is it when I see Hillary Clinton, I think of that piece from that movie with Joan Crawford? Or Barbara Boxer? Or Debbie Stabenow? Or Barbara Mikulski? Why do I think No Wire Hangers? Does that make me a misogynist? I'm asking you. I mean, I don't think that when I see Condoleezza Rice. I don't like her politics, but she doesn't provoke in me No Wire Hangers. There are other women who are distinguished in politics. These Democrats make me think of Joan Crawford and No Wire Hangers. Do you understand that or not? You get that through your head? You know, in a way, Barack Obama, you got to bless him. Thank God we missed Hillary. I couldn't take it. As bad as his politics might be if he wins, and right now it's iffy, who knows what, thank God it won't be the Clintons again. I mean, thank God that's over with. Just thank God I wouldn't have to listen to that sanctimonious rubbish and all of those, you know, it's like fruit on the bottom. It's like rotting fruit on a jungle floor, that crew. Ann Lewis. Suddenly she was back again, Bonnie Frank's sister. I still don't know if there's really an Ann Lewis. I think it's Bonnie, Frank, and Drag, if you want to know the truth. I think that he switches. You know, it's just like a movie with those two. WTNT Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I just wanted to comment on your article about the outsourcing of intelligence personnel.
Yes, yes.
And I really don't think it's that big a deal, let me explain why. I work in data processing for the last 30-plus years, and we've got lots of friends, including my brother who went to work as an outside contractor for the FBI and some other of the agencies. And the background checks they do, I mean, they contacted, you know, his Latin teacher, his football coach. They came around. I mean, he wasn't.
That's good. That's very good to hear. And in your brother's case, I'm sure that is true. But can we be sure that of the 25% of intelligence jobs that are being held by contractors, not government workers, how do we know all of them are as good as your brother? How do we know all of them have been subjected to the same intelligence screening? How do we know that some of them are not foreign agents posing as you know, reliable workers? You know, I don't think the vetting is as good in private contracting as it would be for the government.
No, I think it's going to be the exact same thing, to be honest. And the beauty of contractors is if they don't deliver, you just say contract's over, you're gone. You get these other guys.
Yeah, I understand the bottom line mentality, but I'm a little worried about outsourcing intelligence agencies. Somehow I'm a little worried about that. Congress required the report because of concern that spy agencies might be relying too heavily on outside contractors to conduct sensitive intelligence work. No, I don't know. This is very close to me waking up in a month and hearing that George Bush has outsourced the leadership of the Pentagon to China because they work for less. And that, don't worry about it. We're vetting all of these former members of the People's Military, People's Republic of China, the PRC.
They will be wearing American uniforms. They will not be donning the blue uniform with the red star. They will be waving the red, white, and blue. Now, although they don't look like you, and although they speak a foreign language, have no fear whatsoever. Because, well, good night and good luck.
Savage.
Prepare to be shocked. This is the amazing Savage Nation, as heard only on your local station. Nowhere else in America can it be heard. How in the world does this show survive being so honest and truthful? I mean, you look at this DNC convention, you got to admit that something's wrong somewhere. They're like children. And again, you don't even have to go past my parody of them screaming, not realizing that there's an electronic device called a microphone that magnifies their voice. They're still play-acting 19th century conventionology. You know, the whole convention thing, I think, should be outlawed and banned. The American taxpayer should say, enough is enough. Stop wasting time and money on this rubbish. This goes back to before there was a telephone. During the Continental Congress, it was a way they got together to talk about who was going to run with planks. I want to plank on more salt, for example, and more tea, less tax on the tea. They were planks that they brought together at these congresses, at these conventions to present, okay? Well, I think that with the advent of the telephone, the invention of the telephone, they kind of didn't need a convention anymore. So what is it for? To, you know, enrich the prostitutes of the city or what? What is this for? It's stupid. We don't need it. It's all, and the whole thing about, as I said to you, is like a giant corporate convention anyway. It's meaningless. It's bland. It's vanilla. There's nothing going on. They cut out all of the interesting speeches. All the plankton was knocked out. All you hear are the whales saying nothing. So that's why I'm not doing a lot of it today. I'll cut in and out. What are they doing now? They're doing the Macarena now, the women? Let's hear the women. Just
not
cut in.
Ready. America's influence in the world is reduced, and the threats to our nation are even greater.
Ah, shut up. Get off the stage. What do you mean reduced? The dollar's just doing great. That's the new party line. America's influence will be restored with Obama. The influence has never been better, thank you. You know, if our influence is so bad, how come they all want to flood in here, the illegal aliens, if it's so bad? America's influenced. We've lost reputation. You know, they start off on a path. They don't know how to stop. Hey, wake up, Elijah Cummings. The dollar is doing great. Tourists are flooding to New York City and San Francisco and points in the middle. And everyone who can breaks across the border to come to this horrible, rotten, stinking country that you hate so much. Get out of here with this rubbish. God bless America. I hope we can just survive this election. Play East Coast Girls or this and that and whatever. Savage Nation. The eye is giving me the flying... It's the Flying Dutchman of the right eye.
Well, East Coast Girls are hit by really dick.
I want to go swimming after the show today. It's so hot here. Got a skin outbreak. It's so hot. I hate it.
They knock me out when I'm down there. The Midwest farmer's daughter.
I want to hunt on the beach, even though I'm in San Francisco. I'd like to just hang out on the beach and see the beach patrol arresting drunks and people who, like, urinate on the sand just with the cops. California, Northern California is so boring. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You know, Southern California, I don't know how it develops so differently. They've got piers that go out into the ocean where people can go out and walk, get the sea air and fish. Here in Northern California, everything's so pristine, you could die of boredom. There's enough with the pristine already. Everything's protected to the point that even the seabirds are bored. It's so pristine, you don't even want to go to the beach here. There's nothing to see. There was a limit of pristine. How about a pier that goes out 500 yards and you can go out and get air in a pair of shoes instead of having to get bitten by a mad liberal dog? Oh, don't worry. He's friendly. He's out of your crotch. All the mean feminists from the Northern California, they have these dogs, murderous dogs. You go on the beach, they're off leash, and they come up to your crotch. Grrr. Oh, don't worry, he's friendly. Meanwhile, you're standing there frozen like a pillar of salt. Grrr. Don't worry, he's friendly. It's like popcorn. Your French will say popcorn. I'll tell you, your private parts off. Grr. He's friendly. Grr. Drooling in that big drool. What? This is Northern California. At least in Southern California, the people forget. It's like big. It's like New York West. It depends on what you like. If you like pristine phonies, this is the best place on earth. And if you love Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, this is the place for you. That's all. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com website. You know, I predicted, I suspected yesterday that the audience was 50% of normal. Let me explain something. In order to get into the winner's circle in a field, you have to have a sixth sense about your business. I've always known I had a sixth sense for the media, always. And I know in radio in particular, the day I began, I knew I had a sixth and a seventh sense. Yesterday, although the board was full, the callers, you could tell by the lights, I knew that the audience was not there. Well, okay, you don't have to be a genius as the week before, but I figured 50% of normal. And you can't judge it in radio because we don't get daily ratings where you can, like in television, it's every 10 minutes. I would die from that. I don't want that. I don't want to know, like, what word I say provokes an audience response, because then you become a politician. All you do is say the words that provoke it, and you avoid the other words. The next thing you know, it's like a focus group, and you're saying nothing, and you sound like Barbara Boxer. Well, no, you sound like a bland congressman, okay? Let's put it that way. So the only way I can tell is through my website, because we could actually do daily readership on michaelsavage.com. And I asked Art to send me the viewership of michaelsavage.com. He sends it this morning, and bingo, it was 50% of normal. That's what I suspect the radio audience is today, is 50% of normal. Because if most people are away somewhere. I don't know where do they go? I know that psychiatrists go away. The French go away in August. Me, I always work in the summer. I take a vacation after Labor Day when everybody is working. I can't. Who wants to go somewhere right now? Ice cream, children, popsicles. Oh, God. Crowds. I had children. I have them, but they're older now. I could never raise children again. I can't do it. I'm even past the grandchildren phase. Thought about that the other day. That's too personal. I don't want to go into it. I think grandchildren are wonderful at a certain age in your life. After a certain point, you don't even want them. Well, you want a poodles or dogs or something and leave the money to the Bidewee home, whatever. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know. Grandchildren can be trouble, believe me, what goes on today. You wake up and there's the grandson on drugs over your bed with a knife about to poke your heart out, looking down at you in like heavy metal outfits with purple fingernails. No matter what you did, you raised them right, religion, Boy Scouts, and you look up, and there it is. The last thing you see is a grandson over you with some object from that living room about to crush your skull in. You failed me because they put him on drugs. See, in my day, they may not have liked the grandfather, but they didn't kill him. Today, you don't know what's coming. Patricide, grand patricide, grandmal epilepsy. You don't know what's coming. That's all. I know that it's a pleasure to listen to the show. Boring, end of summer. Thank God I'm around. Thank God I'm around to entertain all the hardworking people of America who have nowhere to go. They either can't afford a vacation or they blew it already in July and they're stuck right through the end of the month. They know the convention is a nightmare. They could do without it. How many times do you want to see a misshapen woman Democrat in a pantsuit speaking as though she's on long distance? I'm speaking to you on long distance. Why don't they speak normally? They have that great sound. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I'm going to replay for you Jimmy Carter calling Obama something that I don't know how he gets away with it. Play clip four, and you better listen to this. Listen.
I think it already has sent a wave of approbation and admiration in many countries around the world, just knowing that this black boy who grew up with just a loving mother and grandparents.
I swear to God, I did not Photoshop this. It was not sound shopped, okay? He said that. How could he get away with this? How could Jimmy Carter call Obama this black boy? I'm sorry. I cringe hearing this. I don't know how anybody listening to this show cannot be outraged by this. I don't understand this. So that's why I don't want to hear anymore, because I know it's all rubbish. Now, we played an info and Ali Pond Park story for you. I think it is now time to play another story from Psychological Nudity. For those of you who are anxiously awaiting your copy, and those of you who are going to buy the book, let us play the first autopsy on the Savage Nation.
It's a deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone. Maris hitting his second homer of the day. And the Yankees' sixth homer.
And there is the nostalgia setup, the Mel Allen voice, one of the greatest voices radio has ever heard, and one of the earliest radio voices that I came to love. And here I am, sitting in front of a microphone with a radio voice that millions love, and I'm going to close the hour out now with another story that will be in my autobiography, and it's called My First Embalming, since we talked about The Undertaker, and here it is. I was now a late teenager. And I had gone to Europe, big trip to Europe, you know, hippie, beatnik trip to Europe, see the museums, blah, 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 came back on a ship. I come back from Europe and I thought I had become a little off base. I was a little kind of teenage angst, little nuts. So I took a job in a mortuary at Queens General Hospital. I remember it to this day, red brick, big smokestack, looked like a crematorium. And I go in there as an assistant to just basically mop up and sweep up in a mortuary. And I had never seen an embalming. I don't know why I took that job of all jobs. It was like a bizarre choice to begin with. I guess it proves I was a little off-base after going to Europe. But then again, I wouldn't be the first nor the last person to come back from Europe and think they were a little crazy. Just take a look at Europe. So I go down into the thing, and the guy gives me an apron and a mop. And he says, just basically your job is to mop up the floor. But meanwhile, I'm watching the autopsies. This was not this is really my first autopsy, not my first embalming. It's my first autopsy. So I watched a doctor. Now, here's a doctor with a medical degree. He was a medical examiner performing an autopsy. He has a cigar in his mouth, which I thought was weird and kind of disrespectful to the dead. The guy is chomping on a cigar. He cuts open a dead woman's head, like the top of her head, to pull back the skull cap and to remove the brains for, you know, that's what an autopsy is you examine the organs. And I'll never forget it as long as I lived. She happened to have been an African-American lady and a large woman, and he was pulling and pulling and pulling, and the skull wouldn't pull off, and he puts his foot up against the gurney that she's on, or the stainless steel thing, and pulling and cursing and the cigar, and I'm mopping the kid in the room there. I couldn't believe what I'm watching. And finally, he curses, and there it comes out, and that's it. So now then I see another man. A man must have been 50, 55, white man in good shape, just slim, gray-haired, but not old-looking, dead, and he was completely naked, as you would expect, on a slab. And the kid's mopping, and I look very carefully at the corpse. And I, again, was novel and unique because I didn't understand much about death at that time, as much as I since learned. And then there was a young child, 2 or 3 years old, as beautiful as a doll. Blonde hair, blue eyes, like a doll. Still and dead. For no reason. Still in debt for no reason. I quit the next day and threw in my mop. And that was my first and last autopsy. I got to tell you, I'm good. No, I listened to the story. You know, you got to listen to your own tunes to know whether you're good or bad. And I got to tell you, that was good. And I just hope that I am not disappointing you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are not really listening to the DNC. Well, I mean, we're tuning in and out as you are. I know most people listening to the show have the TV is on and waiting to see tonight Bill Clinton. And then who's the next one, Beowulf? I don't know who else. I pay no attention. Biden, though. Over Biden. Joe Over Biden. Joe Ubermeiden. Joe Ubermeister. Joe Over Biden. I never liked Biden. when he, like years ago, he had like a mean look to him. I mean, I don't mind mean guys. I understand that. But there was something about him that was distasteful. He always had that, like, something about his teeth. Large teeth that looked like they could, like, bite like a horse. That looks like he just, there was like a, whatever. I mean, just the way he strikes a person. But put that aside. I mean, what does he stand for? Old line smokestack Democrat politics. Smokestack era. How does that relate to change and hope? Do they still want to peddle a change and hope? It's like change, comma, no change. Hope, comma, no hope. You know, that's the new ticket, the new campaign slogan. Change, comma, sorta. Hope, comma, sorta. You know what I mean? Why Biden? It made no sense. He is so old school. I don't know the thinking. Somebody imposed Biden on the Obama team. Something we'll never know. They pushed. Where'd he come from? I guess it would have been Edwards, the shyster. We have to thank God for affairs that we were spared this evil trial lawyer. Whoa, God, just think of that guy. He, Biden at least, is just, you know, an old-timer politician. Probably certainly patriotic. You know, in that sense, you know he's not going to go over a certain line and be totally sold out. I mean, in terms of national security. That's the one thing I could say about Biden, you know, that's good, trying to be positive about it. But Edwards, Edwards looked like he would take the gold out of a corpse. Edwards looks like the type that would have sold bodies if he was in a graduate school for bucks. Edwards looks like he would have taken people who were close to the edge and pushed them over the edge to sell the bodies for anatomy lessons to me. That's going to get bigger and bigger now. The only reason they swept it under the rug is because he's a demon cat. You know that. You know, this guy really abused his own followers in that regard. But that's neither here nor there, you know. How about a Democrat coloring book of the convention? Can we put out a coloring book of the convention? Let's see. Jimmy Carter saying this black boy about Obama with a coloring picture images. That would be a big seller in certain regions of America. How come black people are not mad at Jimmy Carter for saying this black boy? I mean, is that not derogatory? Am I mistaken? I would never use that phrase. I would never use that phrase. Never. Even in private. Who would say that about someone unless you're diminishing them, unless you have a diminished image of them in your own mind? Who would say this? Did you hear what I'm saying to you, how horrendous that is? And he says it on during PBS's coverage of the Democrat convention. Play it again. Just up
I think
to that
it already
point.
Has sent a wave of approbation and admiration in many countries around the world, just knowing that this black boy who grew up with just a loving mother and a...
All right, I'm sorry. Let it go. It's nothing, right? But if, God forbid, a Republican should say one word, let's hear clip 8 again. I got to hear Hillary Clinton and no wire hangers before I close out the hour. Please.
Supporters, please. To my champions, to my sisterhood of the traveling pantsuits.
No wire hangers!
Now let's hear the clip 16, the whole McCain ad. I like that one.
Iran,
I really like
radical Islamic government, known sponsors of terrorism, developing nuclear capabilities to generate power, but threatening to eliminate Israel. Obama says Iran is a tiny country, doesn't pose a serious threat. Terrorism, destroying Israel, those aren't serious threats. Obama, dangerously unprepared to be president.
You're right.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
It's about Tom, John. It's about time, John. Tom, John? About time, John, that you approved of something hostile. It's about time you showed the naval aviator in you. This old guy, man, he can really, you know, you got to admit it. Everyone figured he would collapse on the campaign trail, God forbid. 72, he's still hopping. In fact, as the campaign has worn, he looks stronger. Obama looks meeker. You notice that beginning, like McCain was meek, and Obama looked really forceful and arrogant and posh. Now all of a sudden, Obama's looking meeker, and McCain's looking tougher. You got to hand it to this old guy. I wonder who he's going to pick. If he only picked his wife for the VP slot, bingo, they're over the top. That would be a shocker. Would that be a shocker? If McCain announces his vice presidential pick, and now I announce Cindy McCain as my vice presidential choice. over-the-top win. That's all. I'll be back at the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The Medical Reason Why Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Debunking Man-Induced Global Warming. Republicans Should Treat Voters Like Restaurant Customers. Psychological Nudity. It's a must for everyone who has read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print.
Savage.
Teddy hung out with me. You can't leave. He watches you like a hawk. You get up, the eye goes, they move, they watch everything you do, and they're so tied to you, it's frightening. And then I feel like I'm like cheating on it. If I slip out to do a bike ride, I feel bad. Like I gotta do it, man. I'm sorry. I got a bicycle, or I won't be healthy. And it's like he gives me the eye, like, you cheated, man. I can't wait till you come back. Then he jumps like crazy. It's heartbreakingly wonderful, beautiful. But something happened. It's like it's a dog psychology thing. He has a blanket, a baby blanket thing that he drags with him. I don't know what this is. He bites it and rubs against. All of a sudden, I don't know how to do this on a family show in a nice way now. He's gone beyond just sort of hanging out on that blanket and like biting it a little bit. He's actually treating it like it's a mate. I turn around in the car in the middle of a rainstorm. It's like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. He's giving the blanket the business. I mean, with the whole body movement, it's like internet, dog wacko style. It's really weird. So what am I going to say to him? Don't do it. He's not a person. I figure, who's he harming? I go ahead, have a good time there. And the whole thing was nuts. I didn't know whether to say anything. If I said something, then I would have been crazy to be involved with the dog, what he's doing to a blanket. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? The conflict I was in for that moment. This little cute 10-pound dog is all of a sudden whacked out perv on a blanket with the whole body moving. You know how they look on a lawn when they're doing like number two? All of a sudden, that posture in the car, in the seat, against the blanket. I didn't know what to say to him. If I said, don't do it, I figured I'd make it worse. So I chose to look the other way. I don't know, maybe I'll outgrow it. Who knows? He's 3 years old already. 3 times 7 is 20. But they don't live 7 to 1 anymore, do they? It used to be 7 years to 1 dog year because they fed him kennel ration. They died at 9. 9, if tops 9. Tippy went to 7. They found like stiff on the rug. Utopia Parkway with the garbage men with the brown suits. Grim. Why were the garbage men so different then? They were all involved, they always did something illegal down there by Canarsie with the pits, with the bodies, I think. I don't know, I don't understand that part of it. The garbage men were so rugged looking. They were so unbelievable, like from another world. You didn't look at a garbage man the wrong way in those days, or you would have wound up in you know what I mean? The thing went around. You didn't play around like you're lower than me. You say, oh, I got a white collar. I'm better than you. Your Buick would have wound up in the back of the truck. How you doing? And they came around with those plows in the winter. If you said one wrong word to them in the spring, come the winter, I can guarantee you your car was buried from the plow. That's all I can tell you. So where was I going with it? I forgot already. The dog. Oh, because 7 to 10, 7 to 1, Tippy died at 8, 756. Oh, and the father, same thing, heart attack in the 50s. So it was 7-1. Today's like 20-1. They outlive you. They used to say a dog lives to 25 now, like almost like a monkey. They're almost like a monkey in age. 28, you hear crazy things. 26, they keep them alive with like special things for their real legs and kidney transplants. They have monuments and guys who make monuments that for you don't know what. The world's crazy. The world's a crazy world. It's about, what, 12-1 now? 10-1? Well, less. It goes the other way. They live to 20. No, when it's 5-1. What am I talking about? It goes the other way. 5 years to 1 in a dog life. So that means, oh, he's a teenager. That's what I'm getting at. Little dogs live longer. Okay, so let's, argument's sake, he lives to 20. So 20 is like, what, 80? So 20 is 4-1 already. So if he's 3, he's 12. That's what boys do at 12. So, okay, he's normal. See, I just figured it out through progressive and regressive math that my dog is going through the proper, doing this to a dog blanket. It's okay. He's 12 years old. What do you think your son is doing in a bathroom so long? Unless he lives in Marin County. He's probably putting a spike in his arm. Fort Lauderdale. Carl, welcome to the Savage Nation.
That was funny. My dog does the same exact thing, Michael. It's natural. They always do that. Even the female dog we have does the same thing.
A female? Well, wait a minute. You don't live in a district with gas lamps, do you?
No, we don't. No. It's we've got a female dog and a male dog. They're both poodles, little toy poodles. They do the same
thing. Oh, they're so this is a poodle thing doing that to a blanket?
Yeah, it could just be a poodle thing. I don't know, but it's
well. I'm going to go back. I had other dogs. I had another dog, Tippy, when I was a kid. The one I talk about, he jumped on a guy's leg named Fat John. He would do it to his leg, but that sounded almost normal compared to this, compared to doing to a blanket.
You almost can't.
I know it's an instinct. He wants a girl. It's time to have a baby already. What do you think it's saying? It's time saying, get me a wife already. I need a 10-pounder for him, a little gray girl. Gray poodle. I want one of two of his babies. That'll be cute. Anyway, I got distracted from I wanted to tell that story about Fat. I got to change his name for the innocent or not. He's dead anyway. We'll call him Fat. He was Fat John. So Fat John was a 350-pounder, would come over to the house. They were all in apartments in the Bronx together originally, and then they moved to various Queens, different things, some attached, some unattached, some garden apartments, they call them. But they hung together. They all stayed, like, very, very close. And they continued to come over to people's houses, like, unannounced. Every night somebody was in my house from the old neighborhood. They didn't call. They didn't have an appointment like today with a calendar. They'd say, you're there, come over, have coffee. And there was always coffee and food, and they would hang out and talk. Nobody was lonely. That's why there was less psychological injury in those days. They had friends. They didn't need to pay for a shrink to listen to their troubles. They had someone over. They worked it out. So anyway, Fat John, as I will call him, is in there. And everyone, 3, 4, 5 couples. I don't remember. I was a kid. And he was a big guy. I mean, he was a professional gambler. It was interesting, the crowd. They ranged in from legitimate to semi-illegitimate people. But he was like a gambler somewhere, a bookie. I don't know what he did. It was always like shady. Whenever you asked what he did, you got like a weird answer about it. Part-time. But who knows what he did, okay? But I love the guy. He was a wonderful, good man, and we loved him, wife and children. So one day, Tippy jumps on his leg, and Tippy must have been like what Teddy is today, and because he had a calf on him that must have been an 18- and 20-inch calf. So it looked like a dog or something to the dog. You know, you figure if you're a dog walking around on a rug, and that thing looks like a dog, I mean, I don't know what they see in 2-dimension, 1-dimension. But this fat guy's calf must have looked or smelled like a female dog, and bingo. Well, he locked his paws. It was a part chow, Tippy, the one that bit my leg open to the bone years later, as time would have. He locked his paws on. He was like an extreme martial art, like an extreme fighter, that dog. What a pair of arms on him. He locked his paws on him, and I put one over the other like a guy holding a vice grip on another guy's neck. And they couldn't get him off Fat John's leg. And John started to laugh hysterically. He thought it was funny. He's rocking and rolling. The coffee's spilling on him. He's laughing his head off over the dog. And the women are hysterical. They're screaming. My mother's getting a broom, and she starts to whack the dog. Get off from your dog. Get off from your dog. And I'm saying, Ma, he's a dog. Get off from your dirty dog.
And the next thing, I don't know, they got him off somehow. John is laughing and rolling on the couch, and they drag the dog down, like with the chain around the neck, into the basement, and boom, he's locked down there like my uncle. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Let me begin with the obvious. The Mad Hatters in the U.S. Congress. 1890, snowfall tied today in Maine. North Dakota breaks a 1926 snow record. And as I speak with you, the Mad Hatters are meeting in the U.S. Senate to discuss global warming and how to tax us to death. At the same time, this country is imploding like Chernobyl. A petty tin pot dictator named Chavez is rising to power in Venezuela. Make no mistake about it, he's in cahoots with the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, who has sent Iranian murderers to train and infiltrate the United States. The ugliest, most frightening man on the planet is Ahmadinejad, and yet he has friends inside the Democrat National Committee who have reported just yesterday that Iran has not been developing nukes since 2003. This very same Quisling, Mr. Fingar, who put out that false report, in July reported that Iran is developing nukes, and yet the FBI does not arrest him and interrogate him. The Republicans in Congress do not immediately call with outrage for a hearing. So the Senate panel, while we have the greatest snowstorm since 1890 in Maine, passed landmark legislation just hours ago combating global warming by limiting carbon dioxide emissions. The bill passed by the Mad Hatters in the Senate would set caps on U.S. greenhouse gas emissions from electric, utility, transportation, and manufacturing industries beginning in 2012. It would create an incentive system that would give credits to industries that cut pollution. Industries that failed to reduce emissions would be forced to buy credits from others. The Democrat-led Senate Committee of Mad Hatters voted 11-8, largely along party lines, to send the measure to the full Senate for action next year. The rhetoric was astonishing. Senator Barbara Boxer, one of the most foolish creatures to have ever come out of a womb in Brooklyn, said the following.
We are facing a crisis that will hit our children and our grandchildren the hardest if we do not act now. Not to act would be wrong, cowardly, and irresponsible, said Boxer.
Senator Boxer is expected to fly by jet to Bali as part of a U.S. congressional delegation next week. Said committee approval of the bill sends a signal to the rest of the world that the United States is serious about reducing global warming. This is on a day when a snowstorm hits Maine, equal the last largest snowfall on record in 1890. Now I ask you, how can a country survive that has such lunatics in the United States Senate? How is it possible that we can survive? Barbara Boxer, one of the biggest fools ever elected to the U.S. Senate, should be told, Barbara, North Dakota is buried in snow. It's broken a 1926 record for snow. Barbara, Maine has tied an 1890 record before cars were out there. Barbara, wake up. You're a moron. You're an idiot. You're a psycho. All I can do is disseminate the truth. On my website, michaelsavage.com, I've had article after article for the last 2 years showing you one scientist after another who has dared break with the maniacs and have debunked the part of the global warming myth. Even NASA itself has put out a report debunking a major part of the global warming myth, but the media won't report it. You click on my website, you'll see article after article, international scientist after international scientist. I have dozens of articles. Global warming, the cold hard facts. Scientists respond to Gore's warnings of climate catastrophe. Do you know that one of the scientists in the UN who shared part of the Nobel Prize with Gore came out and said this is an outrage, it's a lie? Do you know that the Greenland ice that was pulled up from 1.2 miles below the surface debunks Al Gore's global warming theories? You didn't read any of this. I will tell you, you've got to read this for yourself. You cannot believe this. It's unbelievable to me that even the Weather Channel founder himself has said global warming is the biggest hoax in history. I'm not making this up. It's been printed, but not in the New York Times. It's been published, but not in the LA Times. It's been disseminated, but not on CNN. I'm a single man alone trying to sound the alarm about radical Islam and about radical environmentalism and so many other radical isms that the burden is becoming a little too great for me. And I need your help. I need your help by listening to the show. And also, I need your help in supporting the advertisers who have not only stuck with me, but increased the amount of ad time on this show. And now I'll take a few calls before I leave this evening. We will go to Kansas City, Missouri. Jason on KCMO, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, thank you for speaking so strongly and so well for so many of us that don't get heard. I'm calling for your help and guidance. I'm a father of four sons, and I see what's coming. The invasion from the South, Chi-Coms and oil barons buying my country's sovereignty, and the swine in the government on both sides, letting it happen as they get rich from it all. When all this
Yes, I feel as though it's a Bruegel painting, and the pigs are dancing, swilling beer, swilling wine, rolling in fat with money falling out of their pockets. If I were a cartoonist, that's what I would see, men in striped pants, women in striped dresses dancing in the Senate with money falling out of their pockets, swilling beer, swilling wine, and stuffing their faces with pork. That's what I would see. It's a horrible, it's actually a George Gross painting, not a Bruegel painting. Jason, I don't have an answer other than to disseminate the truth, because there is a saying from the Bible that says, the truth shall set you free. I don't know whether it will set us free. I see the pigs dancing, my friend, and that's all I see. When I see former senators like Bob Dole going to work for the UAE, when I see that hag, Madeleine Albright, lobbying on behalf of the UAE to turn the port security over to the United Arab Emirates, when I see one senator after another quitting to go to work for the highest price, I too, my friend, I'm concerned about the future of America.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, let me talk about my dog for a minute, because it's a very interesting thing. If you see the world through the eyes of a dog, you can see an awful lot of the world that you normally wouldn't see. Yesterday, I finished my radio show in San Francisco, and then I went for a walk downtown, in the downtown, as people were boarding buses and running to the underground and getting in cars to go home. At about 6:15, 6:30, I walked around the streets of downtown San Francisco, for the first time with my little dog. Now, he's a small dog. He's a 9-pound toy poodle. And I noticed something peculiar. Not that he peed on over 50 to 100 items in that 30-minute walk. That unto itself is a biological phenomenon that I don't understand. I don't know if there's sufficient liquid in his body to have covered all of the garbage cans, telephone poles, bushes, etc., in that short radius, but somehow he manages to muster even more fluid just when you think it's impossible. It's like watching a high wire act that you say can't go further, and it goes further. So to make a long story short, I'm walking little Teddy around, and I'm watching the people go home. It's one of the things I enjoy doing. I like the hustle and bustle of a city. I go berserk if I stay in the suburbs too long. I go berserk, totally berserk. So I watch the people coming and going. I watch them going into the bars. I enjoy watching people relieving tension by having a few drinks after work in the upscale bars downtown. I like the boys and the girls talking, the men and the women, et cetera. The car's coming, the car's going.
And I generally just enjoy being alive and feeling the fog on my face and hearing the hustle and bustle of a city at the end of a day's work. But I noticed something as I walked little Teddy around the streets of downtown San Francisco after the radio show last night, which is how few people even noticed there was a little dog in the street. How many of them were like robotic? Now, I got to tell you something. A little dog like this is not a common sight in San Francisco. In fact, what's amazing is how few dogs you ever see in the downtown area of San Francisco at all. There are dogs in San Francisco, but they're generally not in the work district. That's not 100% true in other cities. In some cities, you actually see animals downtown. Let's just put that aside for a minute. You don't see dogs there too often. You don't see a cute little dog like this. The point I'm getting at is that people are like automatons. They don't notice them. Now I'm going to ask you a question. What kind of person, race and ethnicity sex, do you think, A, noticed this dog more frequently than the general population, and B, of those who noticed the dog, who smiled the most? This is a small, unscientific sample of downtown San Francisco from which we can generalize if we choose to, which we will. Because I find that generalizing from subjective observations is as valid as generalizing from objective generalizations, observations. What did I just say? Anyway, the question is, who do you think smiled at the dog the most? And who do you think didn't even notice the dog the most? Racially, no. Which race? And B, why am I asking you this question? Answer, because I refuse to talk about Democrats and Republicans. Absolutely refuse, will not do it. Not my cup of tea. Now, if you're offended at me, I can understand it. And you can call me if you're offended. But I'm going to talk more about dogs and a movie I saw last night on the Savage Nation. Or if you're bored of those topics, I can talk about the care of old clocks, because I collect old clocks. And many of you don't understand how incredibly wonderful it is to have a pendulum clock that's over 100 years old that still runs properly. And to wind it once a week and to hear a tick and to make sure that it's running properly is an amazing relaxation for me. I know, don't get me wrong, it's not the cure for anything. It's just a hobby of mine. Sacramento, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I definitely think that the Caucasian young females would like the dogs the most. No question about it. They still have
them. Well, that's very interesting. Yes, the dog is a chick magnate, but that's magnet, but that's not what chick magnate. That's funny. I'm sure he's a chick magnate for other small toy poodle girls, but he is a chick magnet, but that's not what I use him for because I'm not in that category of operations at this stage of my life. But they were not the number one group that smiled at Teddy as I walked him the street. It was young and middle-aged Asian men, mainly Chinese men. Would you believe it? You'd never, ever expect that because you would think Asian men are very taciturn and to themselves and don't show their emotion like everyone else, but perhaps even a little more so. But the dog melted a lot of the Asian guys, and I saw them smile, and I thought it was beautiful to see. That's something that you should know for a couple of reasons which have no relevance whatsoever to the news. But what astounded me was how most people didn't even see a dog walking around amongst them. They were robotic. They didn't even notice them, you know. So now, before I'm going to take a few other calls on these wonderful topics in a minute, and then I'm going to talk about a wonderful film I saw late last night with its political implications to today's events. And the movie was called Shake Hands with the Devil, starring James Cagney, 1959, black and white, Turner Classic Movies, my favorite channel now. I just love that. I love the announcer. I love this, the elevated train. I love the whole thing about it. And then I settle back, and I know I'm going to get 2 hours of a movie, an hour and a half of a slower-paced movie from another time, shot in real film stock instead of video, so the depth is better. And it's particularly when you get a black-and-white movie, you're going to get not only depth, but you're going to get real color and great cinematography, as opposed to today's kind of overly processed Kodachrome, and I'm not knocking Kodachrome, Kodachrome-style colorization, which I don't like. If I wanted that, I would just look at the pictures of the Senate candidate from Florida, Kathleen Harris, if I wanted to see colors exemplified. And the reason I'm going to talk about James Cagney in this movie is I never thought he was such a great actor till I saw this. He plays a surgeon in Ireland in 1921, a teaching surgeon at a hospital, who by night is the leader of an underground movement for the Irish Republican Army. At that time, it wasn't called the IRA. It's quite gripping because the protagonist is not so much Cagney as it is an actor who plays an American medical student, a surgical student, who does not want to be involved in the fighting in Ireland because he had just come back from World War I and he said, I've seen enough killing in my lifetime. I'm a friend of yours, but I'm not going to kill anymore. That's how it starts. But eventually the American gets drawn into the battle, and it's against the black and tans, who are a, let's put it this way, a particularly vicious group of thugs sent in by the British military to terrorize and brutalize the Irish into submission. Now, the story is not only a beautiful art, beautiful in terms of art and a great story, but it has phenomenal relevance with regard to Israel slash the Palestinians, Iraq slash the Americans, and other such topics today. And I'm going to talk about it from the point of view of that movie right here on The Savage Nation, the greatest talk fest in town.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tampa, Florida. Ken, you're on The Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. It's not a dog I'm talking about, but it's a 17-year-old cat, and golden cat, and it was an incredible story. I went on a trip to San Francisco. My brother lives in Reno, and we drove to San Francisco from there. And we had a hotel all set up, but we had no idea if we could get the cat in. So we figured, well, we better sneak the cat in. So we go through a whole incredible fiasco to get this cat in there. We get the cat in, and then we spend 3 days there, and we're leaving. And as you were talking about who was more impressed with your dog, and it was amazing when we left. I was walking the cat. I held the cat, and I walked right through the restaurant, and everybody, all the Orientals, I was in Japanese town, was so incredible. They were all just smiling and laughing, and they kept saying, tiger, tiger, tiger. It was amazing.
And it's funny because normally they wouldn't respond. They're very quiet people. They're not, let's say, they're not outgoing, that you'd, but yet the animal brought that out, right? That's what you're getting at? I know it's very amazing. People don't believe this story.
They don't talk to you. But when,
right. Asian people love animals. That's the funny thing. Anyway, my friend, thank you. I want to move on to them because I'm again, I don't understand how fast the show is going, but I know what's going on now. I'm back into my old format, which is forgetting politics and talking in general about more interesting things, and the time just flies. So I want to go to the movie. Listen to me. Shake Hands with the Devil, 1959, starring James Cagney. So the plot summary is as follows, and it's directly relevant to today's troubles in the Middle East. Believe me, it is. In 1921 Dublin, the IRA of the time battles the Black and Tans, and they were special British forces who used extremely brutal measures against the Irish. Then there's the Irish-American medical student, Kerry O'Shea, hopes to stay out of it, but while saving a wounded friend, he gets outlawed and then drawn into the rebel organization under his former professor, James Cagney, the professor. Complications arise in the plot, and I don't want to give it away, but he falls in love with a beautiful English hostage, and she's gorgeous. I don't know who this actress was. I think I have her name here. Jennifer Curtis. Never heard of her. Stunning. She could have been a big actress today. She had genuine beauty as opposed to the silicon frauds that are in Hollywood today. And doesn't look like a slut, mind you. We're not talking about cheap white trash, you know, who get away with it with a little silicon and slut-like behavior because of the vermin who run Hollywood. This was a classy lady. Here's the story and how it relates to the Middle East, in my opinion. You watch the movie. Now, of course, it was written to be sympathetic to the Irish. There's no question about it. And I'm sure that it was written with that intent. And it was written with that intent and played by Cagney, I'm sure, because he's Irish and wanted to show the side of the Irish, not the English. Now, without getting drawn into that whole English-Irish thing, please, let's not go there for the moment. I want to draw a parallel to what's going on in the world today. Towards the end of the movie, the general who was leading the IRA, who was not Cagney, is very happy because the British have agreed to a peace treaty. And the peace treaty will grant the Irish dominion, their own parliament, and whatnot. And then there's a showdown with Cagney, the surgeon, who says, I'm not signing it. He said, we agreed that we'd fight to the end to have total freedom. The general says, but this is better than killing and bloodshed, which will go on forever if we don't sign it. And Cagney says, the only reason they're offering you anything at all is because we've got him beat. I'm going to fight him to the end. So the general says, well, we're not going to fight him. He says, well, then there'll be a civil war between us and you. He said, but we fought shoulder to shoulder, he says to Cagney for all these years. He said, well, that doesn't matter. I'll fight you to the end. Anyway, as the movie moves on, Cagney is shown to be a cold-blooded murderer, even though he's a surgeon and he's quite a sympathetic character through most of the movie. He is seen at the end for what he really has become, which is simply a bloodthirsty, psychopathic murderer. From all the years of violence, he has become an unredeemable man. Now, we come now to the politics of the day. The story now can be taken to the Palestinian/Israel situation. Here you've got the Palestine Authority, the PLA, who have broken a deal with the Israelis, for better or for worse, for better or for worse, and they want to stop the violence. They're now facing the Hamas, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, so-called, and the others, and the Hezbollah, who say, we're never going to sign a peace treaty with the Jews. We're going to kill them all and get them out of here. We want all of the land. And the PLA says, but that's crazy. The bloodshed will never stop. So the Palestine Authority, whether you like them or you don't like them is irrelevant, want a homeland of their own. Whether you think it's right or wrong doesn't matter. There are 3 million Palestinians, and they're going to have their homeland. It's just an imperative of time. It's just going to happen, period. You don't have to like it. You don't have to like it at all. Well, you can love it. It doesn't matter. They're going to have a homeland of their own. Now, then you've got elements within them who are so bloodthirsty, they've been steeped since childhood to hate and kill Jews, that they will never, ever sign a peace treaty. And just as in this movie, Shake Hands with the Devil, just as Cagney is killed off in the end because he's a bloodthirsty devil, that's what has to happen in Israel. And it's going to happen from within within the Palestinian Authority itself. They have to kill off the psychopaths amongst themselves to bring peace to the area, relative peace, and to see a two-state solution to the area. And likewise in Iraq. The Iraqi government has to get strong enough to kill off the insane, bloodthirsty maniacs, allegedly now being run by Zarqawi. I don't believe a word of it. It's run by Iran, probably in Syria. God only knows who else. Probably some Saudis as well, for all we know. All of it's done by money. But only when the Iraqi government can kill off the bloodthirsty amongst them will they have a nation again. I mean, the movie is amazing. Highly recommended. Shake Hands with the Devil. 1959, black and white. And one more note about it, which is the imagery. The directing was pretty good, but by today's standards, you know, when a guy gets shot and there's no blood and there's no bullet wound, you know, it doesn't make sense, that kind of thing. But the imagery is fantastic. The cinematography is extraordinary. The beautiful B&W photography is great. The director's Michael Anderson, cinematographer Erwin Hillier. And here you have a director at work who understands what he's doing. He understands the purpose of the movie, and he has the creative capacity to pull off what he's trying to do. It's a very unusual movie for its time. And I believe, although I'm not an expert on it, Scorsese and Spielberg are saying that this director's work, Michael Anderson, is deserving of much greater recognition. So I highly recommend the movie, Shake Hands with the Devil. And it's based on a novel by the same name, by Reardon Connor. Reardon Connor, if you're looking for a rental. I just love Turner Classic Movies. Love the guy's intros to them. So that's it. There's nothing more you could say about it. I could ask you a loaded question. What is this? How is the situation in Israel different from the situation in Ireland? See, that's a great question. Is there a comparison between the Irish and the Palestinians? And are the Israelis really the British? The answer is, of course not. That's how the left has tried to portray it. But there's no comparison here. The reason is quite simple. The Irish have occupied Ireland, well, let's just say since recorded history,
without the presence of the British. It was a separate nation. That is not true in the area of the Middle East. The Jews have been there since more than since recorded time. And it's questionable as to whether this generation of 3 million Arabic peoples have really been are really descendants of those who have been there before. I doubt it. Some say they're Philistines and things of that nature. But without arguing over that, there is no comparison whatsoever. There's just a confusion. And that's why it's worth talking about.
Savage.
5 o'clock like clockwork after a hard day in high school. My mother, God bless her, would put a tray out for me. Oh, was I spoiled. I'm making up for it now. I'm working my butt off. But the tray, the steak, the French fry. I'm talking French fries. Steak, French fries. Here's the diet I had, the healthful diet. Breakfast was ham and eggs with a jelly donut. Lunch was something light like a meatloaf sandwich with French fries. Dinner was something light like either steak or pot roast with some heavy potato dish, topped off with the health-enhancing cherry vanilla ice cream and a piece of pie, and maybe a glass of milk to go with it, and possibly a... This went on for years. Now, if I were designing an experiment to kill a child, now I'm not suggesting that that's what was going on here. If I were to design an experiment, a cardiotoxic diet to kill a pig in a laboratory, I'd give him that diet for like three months. The pig would roll over and drop dead of an occlusion. I don't know. I'm still kicking. So it has something to do with nothing to do with. You know, it has something to do with nothing to do with it. Now, admittedly, because my father, may rest in peace, died of a heart attack young, and my grandfather, then I was like reaching. Well, what about great-grandfather back in the old country? I was hanging on the hope that he lived to 103. Oh, he too died at 39. Oh, thank you. Three generations dead. I'm the oldest living savage in the history of the family. So every day is like a miracle. Well, that's why I went into nutrition. That's why I searched for the secret to longevity for years in the jungles of the South Seas. Go on my website, see if I'm making it up. I'm one of the original ethnobotanists in the field. And what I discovered is very, very little is known. But what is known is very important. Which vitamins you take and in what proportions, which foods you eat and in what proportions, and which herbs to take when. What is known is very interesting, and it is a lifesaver. I'm telling you it is. And I am a fanatic about mega nutrition. I'm a fanatic about large doses of vitamins, and I have been for 30 years. Also, I know which wines to drink, which not to drink, how much garlic, and I eat raw garlic, the whole story.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.